On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Maybe every generation has its sexual revolution, for, against, or ambivalent on what is now called hooking up. But one thing for sure on American college campuses in recent years has been the almost universal emergence of the campus sex columnist. Nearly every college has one now, a student typing away on every new and old wrinkle in the sheets of passion. Today, we'll hear from three resident experts on how a 21st century generation, raised on sex-saturated media, the internet, and the booty call, are taking on their bodies, themselves, and each other. You may be surprised or way ahead of the curve. Up next on Point, college sex columnists on love, sex, and relationships in the hookup era. Joining me first in the studio is Amber Madison. She is the former sex columnist at the Tufts Daily, the student newspaper at Tufts University. She's out with a new book, Hooking Up, A Girl's All-Out Guide to Sex and Sexuality. Amber, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Also with us from Norfolk, Virginia, is Kate Pringaman. She's a senior at the College of William and Mary. She's been writing the sex column for the student newspaper The Flat Hat since her freshman year there. Kate, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from Pullman in Washington State is Seth Lake. He's a senior at Washington State University. He writes a column about sex and relationships for the Daily Evergreen, the school's student paper. Seth, thanks a lot for coming.
Thanks, Tom.
So here we are. You guys hold the keys to the kingdom and understanding, I guess, what's going on in sex and sexuality and relationships on the campus right now. We're eager to get a sense of that. Kate, let me go to you first. I mean, first of all, what takes a college student into this role as sex columnist? Why'd you pick up the pen on this?
Well, my freshman year, I just wanted to get involved with the school newspaper. And so I went to the interest meeting, and they mentioned that they were looking to start a sex column. And I just thought that that would be really fun. So
did your mom say, honey, couldn't you write on school spirit or new course offerings?
Well, I initially told my parents I was writing about relationships, not as much about sex. So they were really supportive, and then they read a couple, and they had their objections, but we've gotten past that. They're pretty supportive these days. They think I do a good job.
And how's it feel around campus to be the sex columnist at William & Mary? I mean, do you sort of carry it like a sign around campus now?
Not really. The picture that runs with my column, my hand is over my face a little bit, so I don't get recognized just in class all the time. But it helps to be known as the sex columnist because people will talk to me about anything sex-related now. I can just, you know, walk up to people at a party, in the dining hall, wherever, and say, you know, like, what's going on? How do you feel about blowjobs or whatever? And, you know, they're willing to talk to me because they know who I am.
Kate's the place to go. Amber Madison, how about your experience? You're out of Tufts now, but you really dove in on this. Why'd you turn to it, and how did you see your role as the campus sex columnist?
Yeah, well, it was freshman year, and I took a class about human sexuality. And as part of that class, we learned about STDs, and I was horrified because I'm a complete hypochondriac, and just hearing how many people had STDs and how easy it was.
You were just getting the news as a freshman in college? Isn't that a little late?
Well, I mean, I knew. Yeah, exactly. It is a little late. And I think you hear about STDs, but don't. I guess I didn't really understand how prevalent they were. And so my initial interest in starting a sex column was this realization of people need better, I mean, public health information.
It's kind of mission of mercy.
About sex.
Right, we're going to protect the people.
Yeah, protect their genitals from those bumps and sores. And then also, I was really interested in female sexuality and just all these stereotypes that come along with being a sexual female and how a lot of, I know for myself and many of my friends, how sexuality in one way or another really shaped the areas that they were confident in and the areas where they felt really insecure and feeling secure with guys. And another interest of mine was really wanting to empower girls to be able to make sexual decisions based on their inner desires.
Own your miniskirt, you once wrote.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not even about own your miniskirt, but just be confident and make decisions when you want to be having sex, not when you think it's expected of you or you're trying to get a guy to like you.
Mm. I want to look at those gender roles. It's very interesting what the evolution going on there. Seth Lake in Washington State, you're our guy in this chair. And I have to say, looking sort of taking a quick tour across the country, it tends to be women who write these columns. What brought you into it and how's it different being a guy at the keyboard here?
Yeah, well, I guess that's what I hear. I didn't realize that I was one of the few, but it actually started out here at my school. It's me and one of my friends who's a girl, Erin Thomas, actually, who write the column. And it started out at the beginning of last year. She had written, they asked her to write this relationship column, and we both worked for the paper, and she sent it to me to kind of review and edit and see what I thought. And it was all about how men were weak and needed to be more manly and pick up the slack and really take charge and except a little bit more offensively, kind of. And I kind of was like, hey, man, that's not cool. So I wrote one back just as a joke and sent it to her defending the male pride. And we turned them both into the editor, and he read them and said, hey, you guys should do this every week. So it's turned into kind of a he said, she said that we do every week.
And is it a must read on your campus? Is it a popular element of the paper? I mean, do college students really feel like there's something they don't know here?
It is. I'm constantly surprised as to how many people read it and will come up to me the day that it's out and talk about it or the subsequent days after and discuss it and ask questions and, oh, it was hilarious or, oh, it was good or, oh, this happened exactly to me and it's so good to see someone else can relate. And so it does seem to be a pretty popular thing.
Okay, there's a lot we want to learn from you all. Let me just quote here from... This is just from this week, from Purdue University, not one of yours, but this is a column, Sex and the University, it's called, and Elena Gaudino. And she writes, and I think this gets to the kind of stereotype about sex on campus. She says, sex is sex is sex is sex. Around these parts, love and emotion have little to do with a 2 a.m. rendezvous evolving from rounds of beer pong and some bump and grind action on the living room dance floor to your favorite Yin Yang Twins song. You don't even have to like the person. Kate, bring us in to the generational envelope here. You know, the sort of hooking up image is that, I don't know, love and emotion have less to do with sex on campus today than they did, you name it, when past. True?
Well, when past, I can't really answer for. I mean, I'm very much a product of my generation currently, I think. But what I notice is that sex comes in two very distinct forms. You're either in a committed monogamous relationship with just this one person that you care about, or you're hooking up, you're sleeping around, there's no commitment, no attachment. Beer is usually involved. Like, there's not a lot of, like, middle ground dating. College students don't date. We talk about it like this thing that maybe people do somewhere, but none of us actually do.
Do or did somewhere in history. And then you've got this, you've said this, which really turned my head. I mean, it used to be, you know, people, I guess, would date, look for a relationship, and then at some point think about sex. You have said people want to know how to make the transition from hookup to relationship. The sex comes first, and then the hope or the idea of a relationship?
Well, it depends. I've noticed as I've talked to people about, like, the steps of a sexual relationship with a partner, that if you're not really interested in seeing it, you know, go somewhere emotionally, commitment-wise, you'll sleep with them the first night, you'll bring them home, or you'll hook up. I don't know. Sex, specifically, like, as an intercourse, not necessarily, but oral sex, whatever, first time you bring them home. But if you're interested in someone and you see a future there, you're much more likely to take it a little bit slower and not sleep with them right away, which is kind of counterintuitive in a sense.
It sounds like history turned on its head. Seth Lake, is that your experience, your observation as the columnist at Washington State?
I agree completely with what Kate has said. People are so used to hooking up and so prevalent and so kind of not special, I guess I would say, that when you find someone that you're like, man, I really like this girl, or I really like this guy, that people want to take a little bit slower and say, well, let's make this a special thing, or at least let's not make this a completely random drunken thing, and let's make it count a little bit more. Whereas if you're both in the mindset that we're just going to go hook up and have some fun, then, you know, you do.
Amber, here's the phrase I think will get turn the heads of people of a certain age. Sex, okay. Not special. Is that the bottom line out of this? Has it become more ordinary?
I don't think so. Well, I think there is a group of people who see sex, you know, it's very separate from an emotional experience. At the same time,
is that a majority, a minority? Hard to say?
I think it's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
I would not say majority.
Okay.
I would not say majority.
Okay.
At the same time, I knew many, many people, girls and guys in college, who were very much saw sex as an emotional thing as well. So, yeah, do some people approach sex very casually? Yes. But there are also a lot of people who don't. And one thing, I guess when you read that article about sex
from
sex
Purdue.
Sex,
mm-hmm.
What's
love got to do with it? It was kind of the bottom
what
line.
What that is. Shows me is really this defensive reaction. And I don't know if, Kate, what your thoughts are on this. But my feeling is girls in high school, you're taught that all men want you for is sex.
Kate, Amber was raising the question, the sort of notion that girls or young women have become more aggressive sexually, maybe in part because they've seen young men as abusive and they want to sort of stake their own claim in turf here. Have I got that, Amber?
A defensive reaction. And then what I see happening with a lot of guys is a lot of guys in college, and you'll see this after college also, get really into the idea. It's, okay, well, now I want a girlfriend. And now
as opposed
I really,
to?
As opposed to in high
just
school.
Just hooking up.
When
or,
they're, yeah, when they're not. I think guys always want girlfriends, personally. I think they're not always in touch with that, and I think they don't always have the guts to say to their other guy friends that they want a relationship, that they're looking for emotional intimacy. But guys and girls care about more than just sex, and I think it's easier for both of us to put on a front that that's all we care about because it doesn't make you vulnerable. Because you can have sex with someone, and then you're not vulnerable, and feel...
And there's not necessarily any expectation of more than that. You're saying a kind of armor on here that provides.
Absolutely. For a lot of people, it's easier to go out and sleep with someone, and that feels less revealing than saying, I noticed you in my psych class, and I think you're really cute, and you say some really interesting things. Would you have dinner with me?
But that's too...
That's too revealing.
Too revealing. Kate, how about it? This goes right to your observation. People want to know how to make the transition from hookup to relationship, not necessarily the other way around. How do you see what's going on here and the gender dynamic within it?
Well, at least at my school, I've noticed that, as I've said before, we don't date. There is no, would you like to, you know, go to dinner, just the two of us? Would you like to go bowling? Nothing like that.
So how does a relationship get started, or what is it?
Well, relationships get started if you do start doing things one-on-one with a person, that's leading to a relationship.
Do you mean
we don't
hanging
really
out
have
at the
that...
library, or do you mean sex there?
In either case, sex, not always leading to a relationship, but things that would... Dates, going on dates with a member of the opposite sex often leads right into a monogamous relationship. We really have trouble finding that middle ground where you can be interested in someone, have a casual relationship with them where you spend time together aside from being sexual together, and have a sexual component to that relationship when it's not entirely, yes, I love you, we're building a future, that sort of dating relationship. Mm. Everyone that I talk to would really like to have that. Well, not everyone. Some people are very happy in their relationships and some people are very happy sleeping around. But a lot of people that I talk to say it'd be so nice to have some connection with someone else that I'm being sexual with, even if it's a casual one. But like Amber said, we have a really hard time putting ourselves out there to do that. And so I've been talking a lot this year in what I've been writing about how we need to sort of get the balls or whatever to put yourself out there. You don't have anything to lose by going up to a cute guy at the bar and saying, hey, would you like to see a movie with me sometime?
Seth, here's where I'm hearing a kind of tectonic plate shift. I mean, of course, there's always been all kinds of sex, but the idea that the courtship rituals feel sort of out of bounds or unavailable. So it's either, you know, a complete locked up monogamous, we're on our road to marriage thing, or it's just hooking up. Do you feel at Washington State, do you feel that same difficulty about that middle ground where there's a real relationship beyond sex?
I think what Amber said was, excuse me, was right on about hooking up being kind of an armor and a way to do it without feeling vulnerable, because it's such an accepted thing and no one's going to judge you, you know, strangely enough, by just going out and sleeping around necessarily. But I would say there's a little bit more of a dating scene here leading up, not necessarily have sex and then start kind of dating, but there's definitely, it's more of an available situation here to see someone you're interested in and start hanging out with them and get to like them and then become more serious together.
Romance lives at Washington State, but yet we're hearing a different and a really interesting dynamic going on here. Tom Wolfe, of course, famously came out a few years ago in, what was the book? I Am Charlotte Simmons. And wrote about this. What did Wolf say? He got made some fun of for how he saw, invented a DuPont University where he said sex is in the air along with the nitrogen and oxygen. The whole campus was humid with it, tumid with it, lubricated with it. Maybe it's even a kind of armor. We've got a lot of people who want to join the conversation. Let me turn to Spokane, Washington, out in your neck of the woods, roughly, Seth. Emily is calling. Hi, Emily. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on, I can't remember who said it, but the idea that in high school we're all taught that all men want is sex, and I really don't think that's true. I mean, I think when you're in college, everybody wants sex, or everybody wants a relationship, or everybody wants someone to like them, and now there's a level playing field. Girls can go out and all they want is sex, or they don't have to have sex. And I think that sort of disappointing to see that we're sort of focusing it on this whole thing that guys, all they want is sex, because that's sexist, and it's not really how it is, and it's sort of, I don't know, it's equal now, I guess. Not that it's necessarily good or bad that girls can go out and get sex if they want, but, I mean, it's a different perspective on it, I guess.
Yeah, Emily, we hear that from our guests here. Amber Madison saying that's maybe the new thing, different from high school, on the campus, women, young women more empowered. Is there an equality now in this equation as you see it, Amber?
I think as you get older, there's much more of an equality. And I'd just like to comment what I was saying about in high school being taught that all guys want is sex. I in no way think that's true. And I agree, it's completely sexist to say, and horrible as a girl to grow up thinking that all this guy could be interested in me for is for sex. And I think it's wrong. But I do think it is what a lot of girls are taught, and almost in a way to discourage them from having sex.
Because it will mean nothing. It's just,
yeah,
you're just being taken advantage of.
Don't have sex with that guy because it's all that he wants from you. I know he says he loves you, but he couldn't really.
But by the time you get to college, you're saying it gets turned so that the young woman becomes the sort of the actor here.
Well, I know what's happened with me and for a lot of my friends is you realize, and in college, wait a minute, guys have feelings, oh my God, you know? And this guy could actually be enjoying spending time with me as opposed to just he's putting in his time so that then maybe we'll go back and I'll have sex with him. And I think that realization comes as you get older, and it does feel much more equal then when you feel this guy values me for being a person, not for being someone he can have sex with. Whereas in high school, girls don't have that kind of confidence because I don't think they have the realization of that guys are human beings that have feelings, that have emotions.
Christy's calling from Rock Island, Illinois. Hi, Christy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to kind of piggyback off that and really go with what was said about girls getting into college and feeling like, you know, they can kind of have sex as boys. I feel like in my own case, I'm probably 5 or 6 years out of the college scene, but what I saw in graduate school as well, I feel like women really saw that as empowering. Like they could really say, okay, you know, maybe if guys only want me for sex, you know, maybe I only want guys for sex too. And I really like the idea because, again, I think it gives women an empowerment to explore their sexuality in more ways than the confined restrictions of, you know, monogamous one-partner relationships. I think it gives them a lot of freedom to do exploring that guys are given when they're in high school. And I know it's a generalization to say, you know, all guys just want sex from girls in high school, but my experience being in high school, you know, 10 years ago, I feel like that was very much true. And I feel like in college, there's a very strong kind of undertone of guys, you know, going and hooking up with girls at frat parties and bars and that kind of stuff. And for girls to be able to say, wait a second, this is what I want too, I think it's pretty exciting, and I think it's a real kind of revolutionary way for women to be able to think about their sexuality.
You're giving it a thumbs up there. Christy, thanks for your call. Kate, how about it? On this issue of who's initiating, who's, you know, sort of in the driver's seat here, you've looked at this a lot. Is it fair to say it's become equal? Are women, you know, just as likely to initiate these days on campus as men?
I think that's an interesting question. Because I think it's really something that equality in terms of our sexuality is something that we're really working towards. And personally, I like to see what I write and the impact that my column has on campus as a very feminist statement. Because I think it's really important for young women to be able to say, yes, I make my sexual choices.
But is that just a stereotype? Is that just an idea? Or is that actually happening?
I think it's happening. I think it's happening slowly. It would be great if it was happening really fast and women were all across college campuses were already feeling like they made all the choices that they wanted to make and felt completely respected for those. I don't think we're there yet, but I think we're getting there. And I think the more that sex columns like this are around and people are reading them and talking about them, be it they're talking about, you know, technique or they're talking about health issues or relationships, they're talking about it and they're gaining the confidence to make their own choices,
Seth,
because all the information is there.
I'm sorry, Kate. Seth, how about the male perspective here? Do you see it these days, you know, and the young men that you know at Washington State that you write about, do they still see it as kind of their job to hit the accelerator here, or is it just as likely, are they waiting for the young woman to take the lead?
Well, I think many times they're waiting, but I've definitely talked to many, many different guys and know that it happens all the time that definitely get used, just is in the same sense that people usually think of women getting used, you know, getting called and the girl will have sex with them, they'll wake up the next day and she'll be gone, no note, no flower, no nothing.
Getting called, this is the famous booty call?
The booty call. And they wake up and like, oh man, what happened, you know? And
I got
used like a piece of meat, and so it's nice to hear, you know, Amber and the discussion about, you know, hey, guys have feelings too, and it's very true, and it's easy with the culture of hooking up, like we discussed earlier, to pretend like they don't, but you know, oftentimes it can be easily more to the guy than just a hookup, as it can be to the woman. So I really think that things are equal across the board in many, many different ways. And I think it can kind of go underappreciated in some areas for males and in some areas for women.
Seth, Kate, Amber, your candor is really illuminating here. And we're so grateful to you for your generosity in sharing with us. I want to bring one more voice in here, if I may. From Arcata, California, we're joined by Melinda Myers. She's a psychologist and lecturer on human sexuality at Humboldt State University. She wrote that campus paper's sex column for many years. Now she's a few years beyond that. Melinda, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome, Tom. My pleasure.
So here you spend a lot of time on campus. You wrote about it yourself. Now you study it as a scholar. Mm-hmm. What do you see changing? What's evolving? What's new in this turn of the wheel on sex and relationships?
What I've seen over time is exactly what Kate and Amber and Seth are talking about. More and more women coming into what they feel like is their sexual power and saying, if I choose to have a sexual relationship and that's all it is, I've got the right to do that. And I think, as your guests are saying, that there are some unexpected consequences of that, both good and bad. And I think the biggest positive consequence is that it makes women's no more powerful when they have another word to say. And the other word is yes.
But is this, do you see that as a net advance? And in the midst of all this sort of power dynamic, what about passion, the relationship, a more textured, deeper human interaction? Is it getting lost or not?
No, I don't think so. But I think that when that, it's no longer false. That if what you want is a relationship, you do have the freedom to say so, both men and women. And that's what Beth is pointing out, and is that, and Kate, too. And when Amber said, whoa, guys have feelings, my students who write, you know, have to write pretty extensive papers of self-exploration, how they feel about sex, relationships, and the area in between, are saying they're really clear about which of those things they want, and both of them are choices. And most of them, by the time they're juniors and seniors, are moving out of the hooking up phase and are moving into, okay, that was fun in some respects, but it's missing some pieces for me, and I would really like something more committed, something deeper. And most people feel like the quality of the sex in those committed relationships is far better than the hooking up sex.
Melinda, let me ask you, you've talked about the role of pornography in an era where the internet, I mean, this generation of college kids, they've had it basically from the get-go. Of course, pornography is just a wash on the internet. Does that have an effect somehow on people's understanding of sexuality, of themselves, of what a relationship, a sexual relationship is?
Yeah, I see that in people's appraisal of their own sort of sexual attractiveness, that especially young women comparing the shape of their breasts and feeling like their breasts aren't okay because the only ones they've ever seen are fake, and they see them everywhere. And also both men's and women's judgments of their own sexual anatomy and feeling like it's somehow not good enough or not attractive because the only images they're seeing are not real. They're redone, retouched sort of fantasy images, and they're misinterpreted as being representative when they're not.
So they're kind of the media, in this case, porn, getting right in the middle of the most intimate relationships there. Melinda Myers at Humboldt State, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
John's calling from Boston. Hi, John. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Okay. What do you see?
I just simply like to say that, you know, I never went to college full-time, but on a larger social level, I really believe that the equal, you know, the playing field when it comes to sex is far from equal in terms of people's perception of male and female promiscuity. I really think that men oftentimes equate sex to some level of conquest. I think women are often given the short end of the stick. They're seen as sluts or hoes or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I'm in my mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes men are labeled players, and it's a positive thing, and they're seen as powerful when they sleep with more women. Women are just given the opposite. I don't see the equality of the playing field. Maybe in college, where there's a more liberal atmosphere when it comes to ideas about sexuality, there may be an equaling of the playing field, but on a larger social level, media-wise, everything MTV generates, there's just not an equality there. I don't see it.
It's a great observation. You see an older playing field still at work here. Kate, how about it? Men who are sexually active, players. Women sexually active, sluts. Do you see that as the perception on your campus or something else?
Well, I feel like it's still a perception that persists in our society, and I feel like we are taking steps to move past that. But I don't think that it's gone by any means, no. Girls and women are still frowned upon a little bit more for talking about sex, for being really comfortable. And one thing I just like to point out, when we're talking about girls and women being comfortable talking about sex and deciding their sexual choices, they're not always deciding to have sex either.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're deciding not to have sex or to set their own boundaries where they need to. And Professor Myers said something really interesting earlier that I know I've written about, when she said that it's good for girls to have another choice, and that choice is yes, because you have to be able to confidently say, yes, I'm choosing to have sex, to be able to confidently say, no, I'm choosing not to have sex. You have to be able to be respected for both of those options in order to be taken seriously and feel comfortable with your choices.
Amber, you wrote a column, it's a couple of years ago now, called, headlined, Why We Hook Up. And it took on this idea I guess it was a critic saying, you know, women think they're empowered here, but actually they're just selling themselves cheap, and this is degrading for women to pick up the yes alternative here. I found your logic train in response to that something new to me anyway. I wish you'd share it for us.
Well, what the column that was written in the paper basically asserted that men see women as sex objects because they can hook up with them without having to take them out on dates and buy them dinners.
This is the hookup dynamic.
This is what this guy wrote. So that made me angry because I'm like, okay, so you're saying you should have to pay for sex. You're basically calling us prostitutes.
So you weren't right. Saying the quick hookup doesn't happen. You're saying you in fact turned it around and said, in your view, it was better because there was no advance payoff with dinner and flowers and movies.
Well, my point is that a lot of how people meet these days is the whole idea of a hookup. And it's maybe meeting, talking, not necessarily going home and sleeping together, maybe making out, mm-hmm. maybe not even. But it seems to be very alarming to a lot of people that the whole fact that we're not dating. But my point is, whether you're going on a date or you're meeting someone at a party, how you meet someone has nothing to do with whether or not they respect you. And just because some guy is going to buy you like a chocolate malt and a cheeseburger doesn't mean that he's earning sex. Or
so
that
you can
he
go
then
straight
deserves
to sex without that, and it's not worse, you're saying. It's not somehow morally bankrupt by comparison.
Well, I think it's everyone's personal decision when they want to have sex. And as long as you are following what feels good for you, and for a lot of girls, that's going to mean not going straight to sex. For some girls, maybe it does mean going straight to sex, but I think there are other ways to get to know someone than over a dinner date. And I think that really a whole focus on the fact that, oh, people don't go on dates and men aren't buying them things before they sleep with them, I think that that's not really the point.
Kate, I mean, we don't want to put too rosy a gloss on the past. I mean, of course, you know, all kinds of things have always happened here. But what about Amber's logic line there? That, well, if you go straight to sex instead of dating around and getting to know the person first, that's not necessarily so bad. Dating itself can be a kind of cheapening barter. Do you buy that?
Well, I totally agree with what Amber's saying about the classic date. Boy picks you up, buys you flowers, takes you to dinner, you're expected to produce something sexually. Like that, I like to think we're way past that. I hope so. That, you know, oh, he paid for my movie ticket, so now I've got to make out with him.
Of course, that didn't always happen, I can personally attest.
I'd like to hope we're so far past that. But so when I talk about how my campus seems to wonder what happened to dating and where dating is, we're not talking as much about that classic date sense, but that sort of middle ground relationship where you are involved with someone, you're hanging out, you're spending time together outside of a sexual context and also in whatever sexual context you're choosing. And that's something that we're really missing, is really getting to know people that we're sexual with when it's not a situation where we're monogamous and super committed, because we have relationships. College students are in relationships. They are in love. They are making plans. They are really passionate with their partners, or they're really random and really casual about their sexuality. That middle relationship is what we're missing, and it doesn't have to be a milkshake and a cheeseburger. It just has to be getting to know people and interacting.
Amber, you're waving there.
Yeah, I agree. I just want to clarify, I don't think it's a good idea to have sex with someone before you know them.
Though, as I read your column, you describe it as happening a lot.
It does happen some, but I'm not saying that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to say is that it's important that we recognize that there are other ways to get to know someone as opposed to going on a date. And just because college students aren't dating, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're not getting to know people in other ways that they hook up with.
The cheeseburger and the milkshake are getting thrown out the car window here. We've got a lot of callers. Charleston, South Carolina, Ryan. Ryan, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing today, Gus?
We're okay. What do you think? What do you hear, Ryan?
Well, you know, my outlook on the whole thing, I'm 23 years old. I'm right in the middle of it. My whole outlook is I just think that people turn to hookups because they're lazy. I think they're too lazy to really turn, you know, turn respect outwards towards others. They're just, I don't know if it's just that they're lazy or too selfish.
Ryan, and when you say turn to hookups, help us again. What exactly do you mean there?
Well, okay. The whole courtship thing, really, it's not just a way of cheapening everything. In my opinion, it's also a way of showing somebody that you respect them enough to actually spend time with them.
And turning to hookups means short-circuiting that, not doing that, just going straight forward.
Well, you figure people, the way I see it is people turn inwards. They're always concerned about themselves. You know, they don't want to put in any kind of time, any kind of effort, any kind of work into anything meaningful. So then when they do need that human connection, they turn to hookups.
Yeah. Seth Lake, what do you say to Ryan?
Well, I'd say that, like Amber and Katie are saying, that going out on dates isn't the only way to get to know people. You can get to know someone without buying them things and taking them somewhere. You can spend an hour and a half talking with someone at a party instead of an hour and a half sitting down and eating food.
But Ryan's never mind the milkshake. He's saying, let's bring back a little more courtship here, that the sort of short-circuiting of that leaves him cold. Do you hear that on your campus?
Well, yes, in a way, but, you know, define courtship. What are you saying courtship? Does courtship means you have to go on an official event to court someone?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, maybe in 19th century Spain, but now we have lots of ways to hang out together, right?
Well, right. Spending time with anyone is the reason that you court someone, is getting to know them. Like Amber said, that's the important thing, is knowing someone and, you know, relating to them and finding things that you have in common and getting to like the person. So I think each individual person's definition of courtship and what they want out of a relationship is going to be different. If someone is expecting grand things or events or, you know, very public displays of the fact that they're courting, then that's one thing and that's what they want and that's what they're looking for. But that may not be the same case for the next person who is totally comfortable just, you know, spending some time with a bunch of friends and the person that they're interested in a group. So I think it really depends person to person.
Let's get a call from Catherine in Boston. Hi, Catherine. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks.
Yeah.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about, I'm a few years out of the college scene, but this was definitely the same dynamic as when I was in college here in Boston. And I found that it really was an armor that people put up that, you know, I just want to hook up with you. And to get to that sort of dating middle ground, I think that communication is the key. When a guy would make it clear that he wanted to hook up with me or have sex, you know, all it really took is for me to say, you know, I'm kind of an old-fashioned girl. I want to get to know you a little bit more. I kind of like to go out on dates. And I found that, you know, a few guys were turned off by that, and they said, you know, no, see you later. But the majority of them were really intrigued by this and kind of excited by the notion that I was sort of being the first one to let down my armor and say, hey, I want to get to know you. I want to spend time with you.
Intrigued by the notion of a relationship before sex.
Yes, absolutely. They were, you know, excited by the fact that, you know, here's kind of a throwback to, you know, something a little bit more old-fashioned, a little, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm still wading into these waters, and it's absolutely fascinating. I mean, so you offer that richer human relationship, and they were welcoming it very often.
Absolutely, more often than not, they took me up on it and were very excited by the fact that I was sort of the first one to say, you know what, let's, you know, I'm not just interested in you for sex.
What a world, and yet I'm so glad to hear that's still alive. Let me get another call from Nashville. Jan's on the line. Hi, Jan, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, I'm a neurotic parent because this goes against everything that I was ever taught about sex.
Right.
I was taught to be very guilty about sex, but I have a son and a daughter who are moving into their teen years, and I'm curious as to how I should address this whole topic with them as they start. I know that their peers are going to be involved in sex. Mm-hmm. I know that this is going to be something that they're faced with all the time. And so as I talk to my son and as I talk to my daughter, I want them to feel empowered, but I also want them to know that there's, of course, consequences to having sex. I just don't know how to deal with this whole subject with them. This is, again, the way I was taught.
Yeah, I fully hear that, Jan, and thanks for calling. Amber, what's your advice? Jan's a parent, young son and daughter. Mm-hmm. There's a whole swirl of advice coming from you guys, coming from the web, coming from all over the place. What's the best thing a parent can do in the midst of that?
Well, Jan, part of the reason I wrote my book was knowing that so many teenage girls, especially as the audience for my book, really have no idea about sex, about their bodies, and need better and more information. And a lot of parents, even if they're willing to speak with their kids openly about sex, a lot of parents themselves don't really understand a lot of what's going on in the culture these days and don't even have a lot of the medical information to give their children. So in my book, it's a lot about STDs, a lot about contraception, but then it also tackles issues from more emotional angles and deals with the problems that teen girls have with contraception.
But what about this basic question? Many parents, not all, but mm-hmm. many will have the instinct to say, this hooking up thing, this casual quick sex thing, you do not want to go there, son or daughter. Many will have that, yet we're hearing it described as fairly common on the campus. So is it a pointless exercise for parents to pursue that, or is it
essential? No, what I stress in my book and what I think parents should stress with their kids is the idea that, and I think this gets misinterpreted a lot, sexual empowerment should not mean being able to have sex like a guy or being able to have emotionless sex. Sexual empowerment should be about getting in touch with what feels good for you, what sexual decisions feel good for you. And for a lot of people, that's not casual sex. And for a lot of people, that's not hooking up without any kind of emotional relationship, without any kind of dating relationship. And so in my mind, sexual empowerment and being in touch with your sexuality and owning your mini skirt and all of that is really saying, okay, what feels good to me? Does it feel good to me to wait until I'm married to have sex? Does it feel good to me to only have sex with people who say they love me and who I think I'm in love with? Does it make sense and feel good to me to sleep around more, which I feel like generally is not the case for many girls?
And but there's a whole range of options.
There is a whole range of options. And what I've done in my book is not to criticize anyone for their choice, because I think then you turn them off to being safe. So once someone has made the choice of what feels good for them, it's important that they be safe about it.
Kate, our time grows short here. Do you think we're on a good trend line in terms of a new generation's interaction with sex, understanding of sexuality and relationships? Does it feel like a healthy and a good place you're headed toward, or something else?
Well, I think the most important thing that's going on right now, and this is totally an example of it, is that sex is something that we're all talking about. Parents want to talk about it. Teenagers want to talk about it. College students are talking about it. I mean, every week I see people pick up the newspaper with their friends. They're reading the sex column, whatever it is about that week. Sometimes they're laughing because it's something ridiculous. Right. Sometimes they're serious. But we're talking about it and we're getting information so that people can make the informed decisions that they feel comfortable with.
Well, you've all opened a new window for us, and we're grateful for it, for your work at school and for your time today. Kate Pringleman at William & Mary, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Seth Lake at Washington State, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
And Amber Madison with me in the studio, author of Hooking Up, A Girl's All-Out Guide to Sex and Sexuality. Amber, thanks for being here.
Thank you. And Kate and Seth, it was great to meet you guys.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
A case of do or die. The world will always welcome lovers as time.